The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. This is from The Hidden Lamp, Stories of Awakened Women Through the Centuries. And this is Pang Ling Zhao's Daishi's Helping. One day, Layman Pang and his daughter, Pang Ling Zhao, were outselling bamboo baskets. Coming down off a bridge, the layman stumbled and fell. When Ling Zhao saw this, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" cried the layman. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping," replied Ling Zhao. "Luckily, no one was looking," said the layman. That's it. One day, Layman Pang and his daughter, Pang Ling Zhao, were selling bamboo baskets coming down off a bridge. Her father fell, and when she saw him, she ran to her father's side and threw herself to the ground. "What are you doing?" he cried. "I saw you fall, so I'm helping." Luckily, no one was looking. I love this koan. I've talked about it before. And with koans, which is part of the Zen tradition, they keep growing as we grow, as we change, they deepen as our understanding changes. So they're never finished, actually. You can keep going back into them. But for me, this koan brings up, when is it helpful to fall with someone? What is falling? How do we fall together? We're all sort of falling through this universe. How do we fall together? Can we fall to the ground of our being, this truth body that's very vast, boundless, indescribable, mysterious? And what the fundamental, what it rests on, it's the fundamental which our life rests on. Last week I talked about the diamond net of Indra, which is this vast net described in the Avatamsaka Sutra, where everything throughout space and time, you have to imagine this giant net that we are, and everything's interconnected. That at each point of that connection, there's a diamond, and that diamond reflects everything else in the net. That's us. That's not a metaphor. That's actually what our life is. It's that interconnected. Thich Nhat Hanh calls it interbeing or inter-is. He says, the truth that nothing stands alone, that everything interweaves with everything else. Everything inter-is. Interbeing can be seen when we slow down enough to observe any part of our human experience. We can see how it's connected to everything. The trees, the sky, every other person, whether they're here or far away. The body demonstrates inner being with every breath, every inhale and every exhale, every out breath to the trees, into our bodies. Part of us joins the earth. We are the earth. He says we cannot live for a single moment without the constant exchange between our bodies and the natural world. He says relationship with others help us experience inner being, like on the subway. When someone's sobbing, we feel this. We're moved because we understand intuitively that their pain and ours have sameness. Just understanding interbeing is not something that can fully dissolve the illusion of separateness. It certainly helps. But we need to do more than this. We need to integrate the understanding. I said waking down, it has to wake down into our body. We need to feel interbeing to dissolve the illusion of separateness. That is because delusions like emotions live in this subtle body. So there's no place that consciousness ends and the world begins, as we may think. So we separate ourselves from this steady source of life with our mind, our thoughts, our ideas. And it's very humbling to find the only way that we separate ourselves is mentally. That's where it happens. With our minds, we separate ourselves. Immediately, that's where we create all the dualities. We learn that there's no place that our consciousness ends and the world begins. And that dissolution is not conceptual. That actually happens. We can experience that. I was reading, we had Paula Joseph Jones here doing an authentic movement retreat yesterday, moving from the source. And I met her years ago, about 10 years ago now, when I had a great loss, and it was so tremendous. It was title for me at that time, that I was seeking whatever help I could to try and come back. As things I thought were being just destroyed and dissolving. And so I kept having this dream about a black stallion. And I'm not a horse person. So I was like, you know, what's up with this black stallion that keeps coming? And it was a tremendous power. And I thought, I should see a horse. I should, like, something was drawing me to horses. So that's where I met Paula. She's among other things, a semantic, a worker with the body. She's a horse whisperer. She works with people moving with horses because in their presence, they send this, their deep knowing into our body, and they bring out what's essential and true there. Because, you know, they're an animal that is has predators, and we are one to them. We're the predator. So they're giant. So they feel everything. You see them, and they're always twitching and getting signals, right, in their embodiment. So they're very powerful to work with. And really a way to learn how to become more still and steady in the heart. Because for me, that was so felt so disrupted. They're feel-seeing, as Paula would say. Horses are feel-seeing. And so as much as they can teach about the body's ease, they'll show you your awkwardness, your sensuous capacities, your limits, your perceived limits, hopes and fears, and how that can interfere with actually what's happening, what's really happening. What we call the mental afflictions, or this absorption in continually thinking, analyzing, second-guessing, making assumptions, projections, overriding our intuitive bodily knowing. So they can help interrupt that. This first one that she introduced to me, this mare, very nice, docile mare. A lot of them have been injured, and so they're great horses for therapeutic work if they're gentle. And she was very gentle. And Like I said, I have a bit of a fear of horses. I've been thrown off them, so people ask me to ride. I really want to, but I'm terrified because they're so big. And so I get in, and of course I'm like, who are you? And of course there's the mirror. They're like, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? And like the first few minutes was just that reflection of who are you? Who are you? And so she said, just run your hands. Don't even touch her. She'll just stand there. Just run your hands over her body and just tell me what you see, feel, whatever comes. So I start, and I start seeing colors, and I'm saying purple and all this and tangled lines and, you know, really thick stuff right here and just going along. And at the end, she said, oh, you picked out all her injuries in her body. And for some reason, I just started sobbing. I could feel just like, oh my God. And at that moment, I felt this head go, punk, punk. And I saw these big eyes looking at me. And it was like that moment, we became sort of real together. Like I let down whatever I was afraid of, and suddenly we were like found each other. And I was like, oh, there it is. Just this big body showed me this connection. Can you feel that? Not sure if I'm explaining it too well, but it was very powerful. And then to bring that into life, of course. So there are these moments of union that we could feel, and that can expand into practice where there is no separation. This is possible. And I did feel that in that moment. But how do we find it? And I think this koan brings that to light. And of course, sometimes we're on the ground. And of course, here in New York, we meet many people on the ground. The city is a constant for that. Maybe somebody asking for money, for food. Maybe we've been that person on the ground. What do I do? What do you do? Is there something I can give? Is there something you can give in that moment? Maybe it's just, I see you, taking them in. Maybe it's financial. Maybe it's material, a shirt, some food, some clothing. Maybe it's just a bow, kindness. Maybe it's loving words. How might I be ignoring that person on the ground? Maybe it's a family member or a dear friend calling on us, ill, depressed, on the ground, or a crying child about something, and maybe we sit down next to them, and we ask, what's the matter? What's the matter? What's the matter? Maybe we lie next to them in some way, comfort them. What is the appropriate response? We all have to find this and feel our way in the dark. We guess, we leap, we make mistakes. We really don't know. It's very alive in that place. So horses are a great biofeedback for who are you. So this Pang family was an enlightened family. We have some of those in the Sangha. The parents come and the child comes to practice. It's kind of cool. Joshin has her two daughters. They all practice, the Pang family. And they lived in the 8th century in China, and they lived rather modestly. In fact, Mr. Pang always thought they had too much possessions, and one day he took whatever was left, he put it in a rowboat, rowed out into the middle of the lake, and dumped it all in the lake. Now you'd probably get arrested for that, but at that time. So he sank it all, and they were all deeply committed to the Buddha way, to each other, And there's a lot of exchanges that are full of dharma. Sometimes they're dancing, really humorous, and insight. And during their lifetime, there was a revolution of Chan practice, which Zen emerged from. And there was a beginning of a realization that you didn't have to be a monastic you can have a home dweller life for realization. And it's not just for men, but for all beings. So you can see that's what was thought before. You needed to be a monk and you needed to be in a male body. So Mr. and Mrs. Pang were enlightened, and their daughter, Ling Zhao, the daughter in this case, was also a Zen adept in her own right. And her name means shining spirit. And they all practiced bodhisattva vows. They had a son, too. We don't know much about the son. I found one place where it says he tilled the soil and grew vegetables. So there's always someone in the family doing something a little different. And the basic idea of a bodhisattva is bodhi means to awaken. And a sattva is a being. So a bodhisattva is an awakening being who is awakening themselves and others at the same time. And also is prepared to stay in the world until all beings are awakened and free. So they realized, a bodhisattva realized the fact of this deep relatedness, deeply drenched with one another. The feeling is how can we be free if other people are, say, in prison, in war, starving, on the ground, greatly suffering? How can we then really be free if they're not? So that's what our work is dedicated to, our connection with everyone and everything, that we're not alone and yet we are alone. We're both. So life is never a solo project. Every turn we'll find connection. So just like the horses, we too live in herds. I didn't realize that when I read that. We're herders. I think that's why COVID felt so painful. We didn't have a herd. We were totally separated from the herd. Ling Zhao and her dad were committed to this bodhisattva path and made this vow to include other people. Sometimes I think we forget that vow. I have. When we're suffering so much ourselves, we forget about other people. But we are connected. And it said that they were, Mr. Pang and his daughter was said to be inseparable and love being together. So we can imagine them together on their way in the market, selling bamboo baskets during the week they made them. Maybe they went over to Grand Army Plaza on the weekend and sell them. And on the way, he tripped. Looking at the curbs here in New York, he fell. She leaps down and lands right next to him. So if this is a literal story or a metaphor, it's not really important. The point is, how does she respond to the situation? How do you respond? And we see in this koan, she's what? She's just no hesitation, unflinching, completely not in self-concern. Just in her body, one body, she feels him go down. She's right there with him. She goes right down with him. She doesn't need a badge. She doesn't need a medal. She doesn't need anyone noticing. She's just responding creatively to what's happening, spontaneously going to where a person's suffering without any calculation at all. Not so easy. In her book on Paula's book is called My Horses, My Body. No, My Body, Myself. I forget, something like that. There's that book, My Body, Myself. Hers is My Horses, Myself, something like that. And there's a quote by James Wright. He says, to live in our body, inhabit the moment in the body, he calls this wild arenas we avoid. So on the other side of the story, her father's response when his daughter threw herself beside him in the ground, he says, luckily, no one was watching. Nobody was looking. So what about him? Does he allow it? Does he take it in? Does he receive help? Does he get a little self-conscious? Ooh, luckily nobody was looking. You fell with me. Luckily no one saw that. I love this part of the story. How do you take that in? We get a little tilt here, a little move in reality. I think where many of us feel when someone wants to help us, we can feel a little bit ashamed. We can brush it off. No, 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 I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. Are we? I used to say that to someone. They were like, wait, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Let's just stop with this. I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. Dido used to say, we're up to here with 10, excuse me, I'm going to use his verbiage, with 10 pounds of shit, and if we hiccup, it's just going to overflow. And we won't say anything. Who is this? No one was looking. Perhaps Mr. Pang is showing us he's not worried about some third person judging or monitoring, looking in, distancing from the interaction. Who is this one looking? Who is it? Could it be you? Could it be him? Fortunately, it is him. No one is looking. He's congruent. He's trusting. He's trustworthy. Did I talk about that? Paula writes in her book, since we're continually thinking, analyzing, second-guessing, often overriding our intuitive bodily knowing, where we're receiving signals and subtleties of behavior directly, we are incongruent. But she says horses are congruent inside, where their feelings and intentions match their outside expressions and behavior. We feel one way and we act another way, our bodies and behaviors mirroring our unconscious habits and thought patterns. So he's incongruent. He's not incongruent. He's congruent. He's matching. He's trustworthy. He's comfortable in his skin. He's attuned to this vast diamondette of currents connected to his daughter, empathizing, acting with balance, sensitivity to his daughter's energetic, subtle body. Nobody keeping score, nobody watching. How is it when we're alone? Is no one looking? Or are we still outside looking and judging and analyzing ourselves? As Trungpa Rinpoche likes to say, few of us are ever alone. That most of the time we span back and we think there is someone who is watching, someone who needs to become whole, needs to become this, that, or the other. When I used to go into Dido Roshi, you know, we start off breath counting, which many of you learned today. And I used to go in and he used to say, no Zendo, Hojin, no monitors, no watcher. Let go of the watcher. Just fall away. Just trust body and mind can drop off just into your breath. I've told this story before, but it so affected me where we were in Sichuan. It was really hot. I had my backpack on. I had met my teacher several times working on a koan. Couldn't see it at all. Just failure after failure as I saw it. Just very frustrated, crying a lot, just meeting like a limit. And I was just like, I want to go. I we start screaming. They're like, I don't want to do this anymore. And yet we're still like right there doing it. And we keep doing it because we know something else. And that's just something that's coming up in our mind. And we're frustrated. And so I was walking up the hill. And there's a phenomena for this. Have you ever been tripped on nothing? Like you just get tripped. So I got tripped. And I fell to the earth. I didn't even get my hands were on my backpack, so I didn't even get them down. I just went straight down. Luckily, it was like peat mossy. And my face just went poof, right in the dirt, just in my mouth, in my eyes. And the first thing I did, I popped up and I was like, did anybody see this? I didn't just fall, but I had to see who saw this, because I felt there was that awkwardness. And then eventually, as I started laying there, I was like, oh my God. And I just started, it was really hot, and I started crying. And all the peat moss, of course, was stuck on my cheeks and burning. And then I started laughing really hard because of what that seemed like and what it felt like. And then I was about to get up, and I looked and I saw the edge of a bowl or something, or a cup. So I started to dig, and it was still there. I was pulling it. No, it wasn't coming up. And I got a stick. I got up, and I was like tracing it and going on the inside. And I pulled up a cup that was from Camp Wapanachi, which was what the monastery was before it became Zen Mountain Monastery. I found one of their dining hall cups. So I always say, if you fall down to the ground, don't get up too quick. There might be some treasures down there to find. Take a look around, see what you can find. Was anyone looking? Hope not. Good thing no one was looking. What do we do when nobody's watching us? What do you do? And part of our inner work is to know the one who is looking at what is going on with ourself. From another perspective, when we fall into our life, is there anyone to be found? How is it when you or I take someone's support? I like this story because it's not about an individual, but it's about an awakening experience. It's relational. They're waking each other up and down. And this happens in our families too. Some of the residents talk about it, and we see some things happening within family connections where we don't tend to think of our families in this way, but it happens. Maybe there's one person in our family who we're very inspired by, where we idealize them perhaps. Really, every member of our family has woken us up in some way, whatever that family is for you. It could be Sangha. It happens. Could be community. Could be people who have healed us, people who have hurt us, people who we can easily forgive, people that we can't forgive, and they're offering us something all the time. We're always waking up together. If we can open to that, opening as much as we can, if not all the way. Dido used to say, if one person in your family is practicing, the whole family's practicing, but they don't know it. So if you're practicing your family, they're practicing. Ling Zhao jumps and comes to the same level as her dad. My friend sent me a video of her playing with her grandson who was just learning to walk. And he's doing that sofa surfing, you know, when the kid goes along and then they grab another piece of sofa and they surf so they can stay up. And suddenly, Ronan decides he's going to just go into the empty space of the living room. He's taking that leap and he takes a few steps and poof, he's down. And she's down there on her knees too. And she just goes right with him, giggling and just rolling on the ground. And she falls right with him. And she didn't even think about it. She just fell right with him, giggling around until he was the one who decided he was ready to try again. That kind of attunement. Ling Zhao Pang didn't plan it out. It was automatic. Something happening together. It also made me think of the number of times with family and friends and some of you who are falling, and I would offer advice or try to fix or worse, judging out of my discomfort, uncertainty, preservation perhaps, protection, feeling at odds with myself. And shifting to presence, learning to just shift to presence, not doing any of that, just being, falling with them, just falling with them. What is our immediate response? Our reactions. We hear a lot in practice, Dharma practice, non-duality. And the basic aspect of non-duality is to be in an activity fully, where there's no separate you standing behind you, talking to yourself about what you are doing, undivided. We take the you out of the you, watching. And compassionate action is non-dual. I remember Shugen Roshi asking me, do you ever know if you're really helping someone? It's an interesting question. Do you ever know if you're helping someone? Our wholeheartedness is in the intention of the activity, and it's impermanent. It doesn't guarantee that it's going to work every time. And if it doesn't work, we try something else. The point is, are we in our activity fully? So Ling Zhao sees her father falling and says, what are you doing? I saw you fall. Fully present in her experience. I saw you fall. There isn't another one having the experience. In Joan Sutherland's Roshi's comment on Ling Zhao's action, she speaks about how it obliterates the idea that there is a helper and a helped one. She said, Ling Zhao, compassion isn't a commodity we deliver, but a commitment to help liberate the intimacy already inherent in any situation. What is most intimate? The koans suggest that we ask this. Usually the most intimate response to another's difficulty begins with the willingness not to flee. Fleeing can take the form of abandoning the situation, and it can also mean escaping into helping, into a whole constellation of ideas about what ought to happen. Intimacy is being willing to stay and accompany and listen, to be vulnerable, surprised, and flexible. It's a willingness to fall with someone and see what becomes possible when we do. She says, At another level, Ling Zhao's gesture suggests we're falling together, lifetime after lifetime. Right now, we are falling through this world, which holds out an invitation to us. Come see what life is like here. We find that it's made of flame and water, wind and earth, sorrow and beauty, love and fear, light and dark, and everything in between. As we fall, if we pick and choose instead of accepting all of life as it offers itself, we're in some way refusing the invitation. If we say to life in this world, I'll take your sunsets, but leave your diseases, we're being stingy in the way that hurts ourselves most of all. So intimacy and awakening are twins, we could say. Not something we try and create or pull out of a situation or out of a relationship or achieve in a relationship. It's already here. It's already here. It's the ground of our being before we start splitting everything apart. So if there's one takeaway today, perhaps it's that the Bodhisattva makes a vow not to make things worse. And you might think, wow, that's setting the bar really low. Try it. For 1 week, don't make anything worse for 1 week. We're all going to report in next Sunday. Right? Don't make anything worse for 1 week. That's the Bodhisattva vow. Don't make anything worse. Stabilize your ship. We can't control the water, but we can stabilize our ship. When we practice, everyone we come in contact with is drawn to that goodness, to the calm, to the clarity, to the steadiness. Just your practice of it, even if you're not, but just knowing and practicing it, people are drawn to that. That's steady. That's constant. That's congruent. We can practice knowing when to be with others, when not to, how to listen, feel what it's like to have our heart open. And when we're closing down, both, all of it. No, we don't know. Perfect. Perfect. Having compassion to fall with someone, which means coming alongside. That's how you the definition of compassion is coming alongside. That's what Ling Zhao Pang does. That's what we can do. We can keep offering our Bodhisattva spirit. Sentient beings are numberless. We're going to serve them. And we're going to spend the rest of our life leaning in and learning what that is. I don't know. I'm putting it together too. Moment by moment. Pang's daughter falls next to her father. She doesn't fix the situation. She just falls next to him. What are you doing? I'm falling down because you fell. Just right there. No other agenda. Really hard. That's how we fall together. Falling shows us that life is uncertain. Falling together. Unknowable. Unpredictable. We go there. We don't flee. As Ling Zhao helps her father, as she falls with him, there is no fixing. It's an intimate fall flowing on together. Paula had this part in her book, from which I've circled many times, from Marguerite Williams, The Velveteen Rabbit. And she writes this, because Dido says, all the way to heaven is heaven itself. It doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen to people who break easily or have sharp edges, who have to be carefully kept. generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly except to people who don't understand. The skin horse, of course, is talking about the time it takes for the body and mind to soften, for self-consciousness and self-importance to be worn away, for the demands to become less insistent, for the ability to listen to deepen, and for our hearts to open. It takes a while. They're like our well-worn stuffed animals. We keep touching them. And the film Pina Bausch, the great choreographer Pina Bausch, tells a dancer who's struggling with motivation on her movement, just dance for love. Just dance for love. In the same way, just practice for love. Nothing less. There's nothing like stopping to take in the sun, the trees, the hills, full-hearted, breathing moment. I saw you fall, so I'm helping. I'll end with a poem by Lee Young Lee, which I think really speaks to this. It's called One Heart. Look at the birds. Even flying is born out of nothing. The first sky is inside you, open at either end of day. The work of wings was always freedom, fastening one heart to every falling thing. Look at the birds. Even flying is born out of nothing. The first sky inside you, open at either end of day. The work of wings was always freedom, fastening one heart to every falling thing. Good luck, Bodhisattvas. We're together in this. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.